You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to the podcast. There's a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution to our P.O. Box, 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for January 11th, 2013. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from just outside that kick-ass end of a century of Nixon, it's The Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
Big news, we discovered that next week is our three-year anniversary.
What?
Yeah.
That's crazy. That can't be true.
It's true.
No, it's not. It can't
be. Yeah,
possibly.
We started in the third week of January 2010.
Wow. Now, yeah. Let me get this straight. If I understand you correctly, we have outlasted current TV.
We have outlasted current TV. We have. Yeah. Al Jazeera should be calling us.
We should. Yeah, they really should. Al Jazeera dollar. Very good dollar. Now,
I would be pleased to work for Al Jazeera.
Yeah,
but,
well, I would too. And let me just get this straight. As we know, even our most favorite shows take off a week or two or seven or 12 or a couple of months on and 3 weeks off. And I'm talking about where we get on the most of our political information. That would be your Comedy Centrals and your Rachel Maddow shows. They're very good shows. We enjoy them thoroughly. But they have guest hosts. They swap in and they occasionally just skip or they do reruns or whatnot. But if I understand you correctly, what you're saying is not only this is our 3-year anniversary, but it's three uninterrupted years.
We've taken a week off. I would have to check, but I don't think we have taken. We recorded on our wedding day.
We did.
We. Recorded while you were going through surgery. Mm-hmm. We recorded while our kid was going through surgery.
Yeah.
So we're crazy. We're just crazy that way.
We are.
And actually, speaking of crazy, we got a very good email this week from Tony that I want to start off with.
All right.
I know we talk a lot. This is Tony writing. I know we talk a lot about right-wing crazies, but are they really that crazy? They simply represent the nutty views of the people in the states they come from. The fools who vote for them want them to act that way.
Yeah.
They got elected to do just what they are doing.
True.
I'm more concerned about the Democrats who keep going right to reach deals with them.
Mm-hmm.
Signing on to torture, tossing Americans in jail without a trial, and looking to cut Medicare and Social Security, and a long list of other things. Don't the rethugs, I hate that word, but whatever. Don't the rethugs have to go right just to create some room from the Democrats? That's a very interesting point.
Uh-huh.
The farther right they go, the farther they drag the Dems with them, and they win.
Mm-hmm.
Mark my words, Chris Christie will go to the wire and maybe win, because people will think that he is a moderate. He's not. And thank you for that email. I think there's a lot to talk about in that email, particularly chicken and egg questions about the nutty views of the people in the states. Where do they get those nutty views? And, you know, the culpability of Fox News to tell people what to think.
Yeah.
It's a chicken and egg thing. I don't know where it begins and ends. I know that there's a lot of people that are afraid for various reasons, afraid of change, afraid of losing power, afraid of diminished economic opportunity, and they turn toward what they see as security. A white guy on TV saying, I love my country and I'm afraid for it, you know, as Glenn Beck did. Right at a time when we were really facing, and I think we liberals underestimate the change of having a non-white president of the United States and what that did to people who are in communities where there aren't any black people and where they don't interact. Yeah, it was scary and still is for a lot of old white people. Who see that as a diminishment of power for themselves and their people. And there's this tribalism that is then thrown out there with the Tea Party and with Glenn Beck and Sarah Palin and so forth that they then cling to and then elect people who reflect that back to them. And I this part about dragging the Democrats to the right, I agree with you on that a lot, but I don't think the Republican Party is doing that to give the Democrats room.
No, no.
It's about money. It's about power and access. And it's not about, at that level, it's not about a philosophical wiggle room for either party.
No, it's about entertainment.
Yeah. Yeah.
The late, great Mark Twain, when he wrote about slavery in his childhood, used to talk about how he would hear it from the pulpit. When you construct a self-contained social order that depends on fear and paranoia and bigotry and anger, you have to construct all these institutions to keep reinforcing it, to keep feeding back into people what they want to hear, what they expect to hear. And that's all you're seeing. You're seeing a system that has been built up over the course of decades, or, you know, if you look at it a different way, centuries, that is simply going about the business of doing what corporations do. And it's making its customers happy so that it can make a profit. The idea that the first black president freaked out people on the right is somewhat undercut by the fact that they were freaked out by Bill Clinton.
Yeah, yeah.
That they said all the same things. They reacted in the same way. It's much, much worse. Throw a black guy from Chicago into the mix and you just make
it. Well, and I wanted to add to that the bumper sticker that we saw when we went out the other day of I'll vote for the Mormon rather than the moron.
Yeah.
And I looked at that in shock, not because there's a Republican in the parking lot, because there's lots of them. Mm-hmm. But when you think about how educated Barack Obama is.
Yeah.
And how smart and where his intellect is compared to the person that slapped that bumper sticker on a truck.
Mm-hmm.
That's a threat, too. That's a big threat.
There's this lovely bit from Mississippi Burning, I think, Gene Hackman. I think Patoccio sent this along to me as a clip long, long time ago. Gene Hackman explaining why his daddy was a racist. Mm. His character and his daddy, you know, there was a sharecropper who had gotten a black sharecropper who'd, I think, gotten a mule. And his father murdered it, killed it, and drove him out of business because he couldn't bear the idea that this black man was getting ahead. Because being superior to a black man is all his father had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
His definition, there's below that, there's nothing. There's nothing but the sewer, nothing but darkness. So when your social order is defined as Christians, conservative Christians are superior to all other religions. Yeah. White race is superior to all other races. Men are superior to all other genders. And the world suddenly starts filling up with people who aren't Christians, or certainly aren't your kind of Christian, who think your kind of Christianity is kind of bigoted and stupid, and because it is. It's based on fear and ignorance and a deep need to keep your flock stupid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there's a black guy involved, and these gay people keep showing up, and women keep demanding that their lady parts belong to them. Your whole identity is based on these people being afraid of you and being submissive to you.
Yep.
And suddenly they're not. And all you know is that something horrible has gone wrong with the world. Something is broken. Therefore, the end of the world must be at hand, because the natural order of things, what I often call the default wingnut setting of the world, is broken.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to fix it. And that's when snake oil salesmen are happy to come by and sell you what's wrong. Oh, what's wrong? You need more guns. What's wrong? Oh, women are uppity. What's wrong? The Kenyan usurper is out to destroy America. And if you are stuck in this cult, you will believe anything. And I don't believe Rupert Murdoch cares either way.
Yeah. Yeah.
He just has a machine that generates money and power for him. And if it happens to destroy this country, well, that's just unfortunate. He'll just move to some other country and start over there, or his organization will. But I am deeply concerned with Democrats who keep, you know, moving, accepting the shift of the Overton window to the right, to the right, to the right, to the right. And it's a terrible trend. But I'm constantly looking for a place to sink a knife in, to drive a nail in, of some place where you and I and the rest of us sort of scrapping around the table trying to find a way to stop this machine to gain purchase and pull it back to the where it was. Yep. I firmly believe, especially after this last election, I firmly believe the people who are really hardcore part of the country. I think I agree with Tony that it's the voters in those areas that are they're accurately reflected in their politicians. The average Louis Gohmert voter thinks Louis Gohmert's fine.
Yeah.
The average Michelle Bachmann voter thinks Michelle Bachmann is awesome. The average Sarah Palin supporter thinks Sarah Palin is wonderful because they're fucking morons. Mm-hmm. They're bigots and they're morons. And you talk to them for 20 minutes about any subject and you realize, oh, holy shit, you genuinely don't know anything but that which has been shoveled into your head by Fox News and hate radio. You really don't know anything. And on top of that, you have this nice thick layer of smugness.
Yeah.
That, no, I know everything. I'm an actually, it's that
Dunning-Kruger, as you said.
Dunning-Kruger. It's that you're so fucking ignorant, you think you're a genius. Mm-hmm. And there's no way to reach those people at all. And we're stuck with them having their elected representatives in Congress and in school boards forever. They're never going away, ever. They're never going away. These people hung on during the Civil War, man. They hung on during Jim Crow. They hung on during the years of LBJ. They hung on during the Great Society, and they have just been desperate to get rid of Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and put themselves back on the top of the heap for 70 years, 80 years, 100 years. They don't give up. What they need, however, is ignition fluid. They need enablers. They need people.
Well, they need someone to cover up the mirror so they don't see who they actually are.
Yeah. Well, they need someone who
will paint a picture of them as patriot defenders of the unborn, you know, as opposed to.
They will always have that.
Yeah.
They will always have that. There will always be a market for dressing these morons up in a flag and calling them patriots and telling them that their bigotry is actually heroic.
Yeah.
What they need more than anything else, though, are the people who stumble across the ring of power and say, hey, let's slip this on and see how it fits. They need Nixon. They need Reagan. Mm-hmm. They need David Brooks. They need people. They need the people in the middle.
And this is the route that Chris Christie is clearly going.
Absolutely. They need the people in the middle. Mm-hmm. Who don't want mommy and daddy to argue because if you just get along, we'd solve all our problems. They need the third way idiots, mm-hmm. the no labels idiots. They need, you know, useful dupes like Tom Friedman, who will stumble into every single fucking argument naked and clueless and immediately adopt the position. Well, since two people are fighting, they're both probably equally wrong about whatever the fuck it is.
Yep.
That's the engine that moves the Overton window to the right. They just keep demanding 100% of what they want, and we keep giving them 50% because that's what centrism means. That's what reasonableness means. That's what David Brooks is all about. And until those people who do know better, I don't fault someone who's been raised in an ignorant culture by ignorant people to believe terrible things for behaving terribly and ignorant. That's unfortunate, but that's human nature. I really fault people who goddamn well know better.
But I think there's also a schizophrenia in the populace between not wanting fighting to go on in Washington or not wanting the left and the right. Let's meet in the I'm more in the middle, you know, which is a way also of opting out of actually understanding issues. Mm-hmm. But the schizophrenia is, yes, they want that reasonable center to resolve all conflict so that they don't have to make any decisions. Or and possibly be wrong. But there's also an addiction to drama, which you really see in the House Republicans, of wanting everything to go up to the edge and have this crisis. And then, you know, we talk about shock doctrine and her book about Naomi Klein's book about
disaster capitalism,
just making it a disaster every time, making it urgent
on
making
purpose.
It on purpose. Mm-hmm. But there's an addiction to that that just gets them high. I was thinking of too about Alex Jones on the Piers Morgan show, losing his mind and
don't think too much about Alex Jones.
Yeah. What?
Don't think too much about.
Don't think too much about Alex Jones.
Because that was just him as at normal volume talking.
Oh, I understand that that's the case. Yeah, I mean, now that he's had a moment on the national stage, people going back and looking at his YouTubes go, "Oh, he's crazy. This crazy all the time."
Yeah. Okay.
I want to make sure that people realize I have no desire to be the liberal Alex Jones. I don't think there can be a liberal Alex Jones because. It's if you're trying to base what you're saying on fact instead of fantasy, you're not going to be that dramatic.
Well, you can tell this is we got a lot of good feedback, by the way, last week's show about storytelling.
Yeah.
The need for
thank you for everyone who wrote nice emails to us about that.
Yeah. And you can be dramatic, but I use some very blunt language when I write. Mm-hmm. I use some very clear, I think, clear, blunt, and accurate language in this podcast. Mm-hmm. You can be dramatic, and you can be compelling, and you can tell a good story. But there's that old law school thing about, you know, when the facts are on your side. When the facts are on your side, argue the facts. When the facts go against you, argue the law. When the facts and the law go against you, pound the table.
Yeah.
And all they do now is pound the table.
Yep.
And the evident. This is where it is self-evident to me that there is a willing conspiracy on the part of the media to prop this dying party up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's absolutely deliberate, eyes wide open conspiracy to keep Republicans propped up so that we can have a game.
Mm-hmm.
Because the evidence of their of Republican rapacity and incompetence is not hidden away in some storage locker somewhere.
No, Dick Armey was on Hardball this week.
There's a public record.
There is.
And and if I, with my little mouse, can find David Brooks in 20 seconds saying crazy shit when he worked for Bill Kristol about how now that we've won in Iraq, aren't those liberals going to have to those liberals all catch merry hell now? Ha 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 ha. Yeah. Or calling Democrats stupid for worrying about deficits and on and on and on and on. These people are guests of David Gregory every fucking week. I can find this shit. Anybody can find this shit. It is the willingness on the part of people like David Gregory to let them get away with it, to make the rules of the game such that rule one, you will never, ever, ever call one of my Republican liar guests that I have on my show a liar in front of me ever. And then we'll have a conversation. And so you have Newt Gingrich or Alex Castellano or people like that wander onto his show on a regular basis and just lie.
Yeah.
And he just looks at him like, well, Rachel, what do you say about what he just said? And he leaves it up to the liberal, whoever that might be this week. Usually it's Harold Ford Jr. or, you know, over the soft-spoken punching bag, EJ Dionne. To say, well, you know, or it's up to someone else to say, well, the tone of voice, maybe if we, and again, he puts these sort of milquetoast centrists on to take on people.
Doris Kearns Goodwin, yes.
She's
the one who's set up to be the other side. Yeah, yeah.
But it's such an open secret that David Gregory is a traitor, is a despicable whore who is a disgrace to his profession. Everyone knows it. And yet he has the most powerful instrument for disseminating disinformation in the center of anyone on television. And he does it every week. And we all know it. And the one thing one is not allowed to say is one is not allowed to go on that show and call him that to his face.
Yep.
At all. And that's where I wrote a little post about Rachel Maddow as Rick Blaine from Casablanca.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to get into that right away.
Yeah.
Which is, you had this wonderful post up about everyone comes to Rachel's.
Everyone comes to Rachel's. And we do.
And putting Rachel Maddow next to Casablanca, I thought that was so wonderful. Yeah. Talk about why Rick in Casablanca is Rachel Maddow and vice versa.
Well, let me explain that I'm not stupid. I've watched Casablanca 400 times, mm-hmm. and I can quote it backwards. And so Rachel Maddow is not cynical. Her heart was not broken by the woman she loved.
She doesn't sit there crying or
doesn't cry into her beer.
Yeah.
What time is it in America? You know, she doesn't have a piano player who's her best pal. And she doesn't fall to pieces. So all of those things I get. But Rick's Cafe Americana in Casablanca is this little oasis of transgressive behavior, very genteel transgressive behavior in an occupied country, in an occupied land that's ruled over by the Vichy government, by the Nazi loyalist government of quote unquote free France. So, there's a lot of ambiguity in the plot about where the lines are drawn. But what's very clear is that the constable, Louis, who's in charge of security there, is only allowed to be head of the police department if he does what the Gestapo tells him to do.
Right.
So he has this pretense of independence, but he says straight up, look, I blow with the prevailing wind, and the prevailing wind blows from Vichy. Mm-hmm. He's very clear. And the one time when he's sort of cross-examining Rick about, what do you really believe? Where do you really stand? Rick says, Louis, are you pro-Vichy or free French? And Louis says something like, you know, serves me right for asking a direct question.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you never answer that question.
Never answer
you never,
directly.
Ever answer what you really believe.
Mm-hmm.
And Rick is allowed to continue letting people play whatever they want. He play his own music in his own bar, slap around the Deutsche Bank, tell people who can come in, who can't, let the good guy win. He lets a young couple win money by cheating in his own casino and slides them some money. He's permitted to get away with all of those things because he keeps himself conspicuously neutral at all times.
Mm-hmm.
But his neutrality is not a journalist neutrality. It's the neutrality of someone who knows if he opens his mouth, the people who really are running the show will wipe him off the face of the earth.
Yep.
And he holds on to this little corner, this little oasis, only by staying completely out of everything.
And it's tenuous.
Yeah.
I mean, there is tension when the entire bar breaks out in La Marseille.
Well, they shut him down.
Yeah.
They shut him down. He allows a forbidden song to be played at his bar. And there's a lovely moment in that movie where you know who's in charge because Victor Laszlo tells the band to play over the Nazis who are singing across the room. It's, mm-hmm. it's a battle of the bands. He tells them to play Le Marseille, play it. And they don't
and
do it.
They look at Rick and Rick nods.
Rick nods.
Yep.
That's when you know who's in charge.
Yep.
And they strike and they happily strike it up and they drown the Nazis out. And the next scene is,
I'm shocked that gambling is going on in this establishment.
Shut it down. Shut it all down.
Yeah.
And the minute Rachel steps over the line, she's gone.
Mm-hmm.
Now, she's perfectly allowed to be in her own show, the Rachel Maddow show, mm-hmm. and talk about anything she wants. But when it gets
to... She can't talk about David Gregory.
There's the thing.
She can't talk about his stock holdings or... Nope. Why he didn't ask the Senate minority leader about his China holdings or
she rails very eloquently, very much. I hope that we are, you know, doing her honor in our little corner of the podcast universe. We very much think of ourselves.
Sort of yeah.
But she gets right up to the edge of saying the Beltway media, who keeps insisting that both sides are equally wrong. The Beltway media, who doesn't seem to be capable of ingesting the fact that one of these people is lying, one of them is not. The people in the Beltway, people in the Beltway media, and who she means is her colleague, David Gregory.
Yeah.
And so when she goes on his show, and there's this lovely article that I linked to in my post about her confronting Alex Castellano.
Yeah.
On the show. Who
was a hugely big douchebag.
To her.
In the model of Dick Armey.
Yes, on purpose. on purpose. But his the fact that he floated, the start of the whole argument, the start of the whole, you know, downward slide, was a lie. Alex Castellano came on the most popular television show, a public affairs show in America on Sunday morning as the Republican and told a fucking lie about how much women make compared to men. Just a lie. Just a complete lie. And there's this sort of real-time reportage on what Rachel was doing. She looks around the room. Other Republican in the room is smirking. And she suddenly realizes, oh, this isn't just something he was briefed on. This is their world. And she's in her mind, she's trying to figure out a way to cope with the fact that this guy just lied right in her face. But part of her is clearly like, but I can't just call him on it. Mm-hmm. I'm not allowed to do that. So she finds a way around it, and he is condescending, and she calls him condescending. But the one thing she never did was say, you're lying, and you know you're lying. But that's the truth. The truth is, of course he's lying. And the Republican knows he's lying. And the intern that served him coffee knows he's lying. And David Gregory knows he's lying. Everybody knows he's lying. But nobody will say anything, because the minute the liberal says, but you're lying. And David Gregory is never mentioned in this story. But this encounter doesn't happen without him orchestrating it.
Absolutely not.
Without him choosing to put the liar that is Alex Castellanos on television. He chooses to put liars on his show all the time, and no one ever mentions it. He chooses to put David Brooks on his show, and when he can't be there, he reads his column, and no one ever mentions it. So it is a study in who's really in charge here. The way you determine that is what I refer to, what Sherlock Holmes referred to as the dog that didn't bark in the night.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Who is it that doesn't get mentioned in these stories? Who is conspicuous by their absence? And every time we rail against the Beltway media doing its terrible best to make sure that no one could distinguish between liberals and conservatives, between allocating blame right down the middle, Rachel Maddow conspicuously stops short of mentioning that the number one sinner in this heap of this pile of shit is her colleague, David Gregory. And she never will, because she can't, because the day she does, the day she becomes unemployed. And that's fascinating to me to watch, because it's so clear that it's a conspiracy. It is an absolute deliberate decision on the part of people like Mr. Gregory and George Stephanopoulos, people like that who operate our media, to keep allowing people who are serial liars on television and never call them on it, because that's how their game is played. So those are the people who need to, you know, perish in a pillar of fire. Those are the people that God needs to really, really visit some boils and locusts on. Because the crazy batshit loonies who live in structures on wheels in a place in Arkansas where sisters and brothers often have intercourse. Those
nice.
See, I'm not completely ranting Alex Jones style. Those people, in a certain sense, don't know no better.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
David Gregory gets up and chooses to be a traitorous douchebag every day of his life, and he gets really well paid for the job. So he's the one who needs to be flogged in public. He's the one who needs to be brought to book.
Well, and that's part of what I want to talk to you about. And I we might be getting off topic here, but we can come back to the middle class next week. I want to ask you about David Gregory and these Sunday shows. You know, we do have a controversy among our listeners as to just how important they are.
Yeah.
And I try to keep, first of all, I try not to watch the Sunday shows except for MSNBC, because it just gets me mad. The same reason that I avoid Joe Scarborough. It just, at some point, my mental health matters more than what David Gregory says.
And this is more and more true for me every week.
Yeah.
I just, you know, at some point.
You've heard it all. You've heard it. You've got the format. You know what's going on. And, you know, at some point, there's just no point. But one of the ways that I put this in perspective is to think about the long game and to think of it as a historian rather than as a participant.
Yep.
And so when I think about, you know, what Jeff Sessions says about food stamps, or what Alex Jones says about guns, or what Alan West or Joe Walsh say now that they've left the Congress and are on speaking tour, both of them.
Mm-hmm.
I find that amazing. There is a sucker born every minute. And if you're going to pay to hear Alan West or Joe Walsh speak at this point in time, there's no hope for you.
Yeah. It was called Vintage Season in the science fiction, when it was a novel, and it turned into a book on temporal tourism, mm-hmm. disaster tourism, people who travel back in the past to watch the worst disasters imaginable.
Watch the Battle of Gettysburg and
Of course, they have all the maps and charts. They know where the safe distance is. This is the house that didn't get destroyed when the meteor hit. So mm-hmm. we'll camp there.
Uh-huh.
And our hero discovers this and figures out who they are, and hilarity ensues. Other than that, if you're here to watch the American Empire collapse on itself, if you're here to get a ringside seat to the people who are consciously wrecking this country for money,
mm-hmm.
then yeah, by all means, you should be watching Meet the Press every fucking week.
Yeah.
Because it's absolutely a ringside seat to the press eating itself alive.
Yep. There is that.
Yeah.
That is the importance of the story in the long arm of history. I don't feel as though any individual thing that John Kyle says on Fox is ever going to matter. I mean, I talk about Father Coughlin's dustbin of history, that he's this racist, anti-Semitic, to his credit, economic populist, but really damaged by his anti-Semitism.
Yes.
Footnote where you have to go and look him up to find out what did he actually say, because no one remembers what Father Coughlin actually said.
Well, and this is a really good point. I'm deeply appreciative that you framed it this way, because this is a fight for the future.
Mm-hmm.
And what we are doing now is what Josephus did after Jerusalem was sacked.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we are, or what the Irish did during the Dark Ages. We are trying to document the atrocities, to quote Atreus once again, but for a reason, not just for our own edification, but what I do believe liberals are doing falteringly, haltingly, whatever, is constructing a counter narrative, a Howard Zinn history
mm-hmm.
of the modern United States. And the reason that's important, frankly, for me at least, it might not be important to anyone else, is I am watching as David Brooks and people like him construct an alternate historical narrative.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I'm not kidding.
And have the highest platform from which to disseminate it as well.
If you simply I've mentally done this, and I stood back and go, holy shit, David Brooks is using his place, the New York Times, to write an alternate conservative history of the United States with himself as the hero, people like him as the hero, as the moderate, center-right, reasonable, civil, humble servant of the common weal, and crazy lefties over here and crazy righties over there. But he has written whole columns about modern conservatism and never mentioned Jerry Falwell.
Lee
Atwater never mentioned the Southern strategy. The Whigs apparently morphed directly into the GOP, who morphed directly into George H.W. Bush, who morphed directly into David Brooks. And nothing but that ever happened. And you look at his rewrite of his own history on the Iraq War. You look at his own rewrite of his history on deficits and fiscal policy. And all of them are busily engaged in doing what they did for Nixon. Speaking of Richard Nixon, talk to any conservative. What do they know about Nixon? Third-rate burglary.
Yep.
Third-rate burglary. He was smeared by the liberal press. He was a great and good man who was smeared by the liberal press. And he was destroyed. And
never mind that he could not get elected in a House primary anywhere in the United States.
Yeah. He resigned. And he resigned because he saw the writing. No, it wasn't a third-rate burglary. It was one of the worst serial killings of constitutional rights in this country in modern American history. Mm-hmm. Orchestrated by Richard Milhouse Nixon, because he was a paranoid, corrupt monster. And yet, scratch a Republican, and what do you find? Pat Buchanan. Mm-hmm. Pat Buchanan's narrative of Richard Nixon. You find John McLaughlin's narrative of Richard Nixon. You find people who've spent 30, 40 years buffing down and deburring all the flaws, covering up all the little telltales and blaming it all on the fucking liberal media and all on a merry misunderstanding. And by the way, compared to Benghazi,
or Clinton's Benghazi is now just a punchline on this podcast, well, by the way. And I hate that because people did die and it was an attack on us.
But compared to Benghazi, it was a third-rate burglary. Compared to, you know, Clinton's penis, for God's sakes, Nixon was nothing. And they're doing it right now with George W. Bush.
Oh, absolutely.
They are working. The Ministry of Truth is working overtime to make sure George Bush never existed.
Yep.
And Republicans were never opposed to deficits. And Republicans never thought Iraq was a good idea. And everything that you think you know about the last 20 years or 10 years or 5 years of history is all the result of the liberal media bias. And by the way, Al Gore is fat and Michael Moore is a monster. And we're watching it happen in real time. We're watching the history of the United States, the future history of this country being fought out right now between David Gregory and David Brooks and the people like that who are desperate to rewrite their own treasonous complicity in what happened during the Bush administration and make it go away.
Mm-hmm. Would you talk for a moment about the national divorce? Because I love that analogy that you used yesterday.
Well, I'm not speaking of anyone's divorce in particular.
No.
I will just speak generically of divorces. I'm just talking about an ugly divorce. Any ugly divorce.
Ugly divorce. All right.
Okay. You have a crazy spouse, or you are the crazy spouse. I don't know. But the thing is, If you're heading towards divorce and you have someone you're married to who is just nuts, who hates you, who wants to cut you to see you bleed, who wants to ruin you, who's come to loathe you. The first thing you do if you're a reasonable person is you try to save the marriage. You try to give them every break. You try to be the reasonable guy and say, look, we're both at fault here. We're both to blame here. Maybe we can reach some accommodation. Is there something we can do? Is there some middle ground we can reach? I'm sure I have faults too. Maybe we get counseling. And if the answer is, fuck you, I want to see you die and burn in hell. And if that's the only answer you ever get, then at some point you have to sign the papers and cut them loose. Mm-hmm. And we are in a great national divorce with the Republican Party and the conservative movement right now. Mm-hmm. And we've already done the due diligence necessary to prove to any God in heaven or disinterested third party that, no, they're fucking crazy. This is not,
it's not a both sides are equally wrong situation.
This is not a no-fault divorce.
Yeah.
This is a their-fault divorce.
Yeah.
They're the problem. They're crazy. They need to be in five-point restraints and whacked up with enough shit to put them to sleep or calm for the next 50 years because they're fucking crazy and they ain't coming back. And here's the problem. We have tried. We have done that and done that and done that. Barack Obama has done this. Look, I gave him everything. I gave him every chance. I gave him every shot. I told them I'd cut 10-1, 20-1, 100-1. It doesn't matter. I gave them everything they asked for. I gave them their own fucking bills. These people filibustered their own bills just to make me look bad. So now it's time to end them. Now it's time to turn the cannon around and say, no, the problem with this country is the Republican Party. Mm-hmm. And the Republican Party needs to be burned to the ground. And then we can fight over who's a better liberal and who's a moderate liberal and who's betrayed the liberal tradition and how. No. And that's fine. I'm happy to have that discussion. I'm happy to have the argument. We can't have that argument while crazy people are all around us, arming themselves to the teeth, talking about watering the tree of liberty with the blood of you and me. That's a conversation you have after the crazy people are locked up.
Yeah.
Not while they're at your front door. So.
Well, and this part about nominating white Republicans to the cabinet.
Yeah.
Over and over again is just.
It's a bridge too far.
And as someone on MSNBC said yesterday, you know, we're getting ready for him to nominate Lindsey Graham and Lindsey Graham vote against him. because he's too liberal.
Well, again, at some point, it has to stop being a demonstration project.
Yeah.
And, you know, you've proven, okay, you've proven your point.
Yeah.
Everyone who's willing to listen, you have proven your point. Everyone who is no longer willing to listen, mark them with a big red X because they're the problem.
Yep.
They're the ones you have to watch out for. And, Susan Rice, as much as I think she would have been a bad nominee for other reasons,
yeah,
like, you know, really bad history on oil and pipeline.
Yeah, absolutely. Stuff, yeah. Yeah.
We tried that.
Yeah.
And the right beat her like a pinata.
Yeah.
Before she was out of the box, before she was, you know, for something that she had nothing to do with. And again, as simply a demonstration project, as a, you see, I nominated a black woman who was highly competent for a position that should be mine to name, and these people over here went crazy. Okay, do that once or twice or three times, and we won't count the people you put on the Supreme Court, the nice ladies you put on the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
But do that once or twice or three times. At some point, you have to say, see, it is therefore proven. You go to that ergo thing.
Yep.
Ergo, it is the case. The Republican Party is crazy and cannot be dealt with as grown-ups. They are juvenile, they're psychotic, and we will treat them as psychotic until they stop being psychotic. But we're not going to keep pretending that there's anyone on the right who's not crazy. And by the way, I extend this during my presidential address to the voters who put them there. Mm-hmm. You people are the problem. What the fuck is your problem? What is wrong with you that you keep listening to people who lie to you? And then you get angry, and then you have to have your anger substitute Key and Peele guy come on and do anger.
Yes. And be very reasonable. Yes.
Be very reasonable. But the time for using your administration as a demonstration project to show how crazy the right is over. You've done it. Congratulations. You have proven your point. Now is the time to do something about it. And if it's only rhetoric, that's fine. But the rhetoric has to start being like Barack Obama did on Meet the Press. David, it's not both sides.
Yep.
And David Gregory just couldn't stand that.
Yep.
Just couldn't fucking stand. Because he said the one thing you're never allowed to say on television. Because you screw things up. Because you declare your loyalties. You say, you know, you're Free French, not pro Vichy.
Yeah.
And not allowed to do that. And so that's why last week David Gregory got all butthurt and crazy and had to take his special moment to explain why. No, it is both sides. Both sides, yeah, are equally wrong. And again, as long as he has a job, that's really your canary in the mine shaft. As long as David Gregory has a job on television in any position of authority, there's something broken in our media. And as long as Rachel Maddow can't mention it, there's something really broken in our media.
We have a letter from Jeffrey that I want to end on.
Hey, Jeffrey.
Hi, Driftglass and Blue Gal. I love your podcast. You guys rock. However, one little thing. It's always one little thing, isn't it, Driftglass? Could you please not refer to the U.S. mail as snail mail? I am a proud U.S. Postal Service employee, and as you may know, we are in a bit of a dilemma. In 2006, Congress passed a job-killing bill that requires the U.S. Postal Service to pre-fund the retirement account, something no other business or agency is forced to do. We are now covered 75 years out, and instead of repealing that law, Daryl Issa and his cronies want to destroy what's left of the greatest postal service in the world by privatizing it. Please, if you and others like Ed Schultz could talk us up. Well, I could give Ed a call, I guess. I don't know how to reach him, but, you know, of course, I'm sure he listens to our podcast. Don't you think so, Driftglass?
I'm sure he does. I can tell. I can tell Schultz. Got your number, Ed.
I love Ed. Yeah. It helped keep almost 500,000 people and the billion-dollar mailing industry from going under. Thank you. And again, keep up the great work. I am sending a donation by U.S. mail. Hey, thank you so much, Jeffrey.
Well, and
we appreciate your letter.
And Jeffrey, that's how you know you're dealing with a cult. You know, we must destroy the post office. Really? Really? Why? Because it's the federal government and all things tainted by the government are always evil.
Yeah, but Daryl Issa, don't you work for the federal government?
Fuck you. I'm in on the inside trying to. And that's the thing. It's a really good institution. And, you know, I put the letter in the thing and it goes across the country and it costs me less than, you know, a gumball. That's a really good service and it doesn't cost the taxpayer anything. And the people, postal workers, I have postal workers in my family. I can tell you horror stories about missing mail. But who couldn't tell horror stories about the place they worked, other than maybe Jesus?
I can tell horror stories about the House Republicans.
Yeah.
Daryl Issa. I could tell horror stories about Daryl Issa.
All human institutions have these flaws. The post office, however, is just such a goddamn good idea.
Yep.
And it's so awesome. I mean, it is just such on paper.
Right. So now we're going to refer to it as United States Union delivered mail.
And so send us your donations by U.S. Mail, if you'd be so kind.
U.S. Mail to P.O. Box, Post Office. 9133 Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
But really, this is the point being, sort of the overall point being, you can tell you're dealing with a cult when they have a checklist.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's down to, and we must destroy the post office.
Mm-hmm.
Because why? Because it's intrusive federal government, and government is always evil. No, see, that's just nuts.
Yeah, it is.
Could have gotten me to talk about reforming entitlements, not getting rid of them and reforming them. If I didn't know anything about history, off the bat, that might be a good idea. But when you start getting down to, and we must get rid of the post office, I know you're crazy.
Yep.
Because only a crazy person would believe such a
thing. And we know your agenda has nothing to do with cost savings or reasonable spending when you take the position you do toward the bloated military budget. And then want to end the post office.
Yeah. Yeah. And by the way, the last thing I want to end on is the gentleman, and I use the term very loosely, who lost his mind and started threatening to kill people.
Oh, yeah. On Crooks and Liars. That's getting a lot of traffic today. We're recording this Thursday afternoon, and there's this gun weapons ammo dealer who did a YouTube.
And this guy's just.
He's whacked out and probably coked up and like he's coked up and he's threatening to kill people if anyone takes away his guns.
Yeah.
On YouTube.
And this is something that
is exactly the kind of person you don't want to have a weapon.
And this is the thing that really does scare me. It's I remember when Timothy McVeigh blew up a federal building.
Yeah.
I'm sure everyone does.
With a daycare center.
Yeah. And I don't know if everyone remembers that. Prior to him blowing that up, all you heard coming out of hate radio was black helicopters, the government's wrong, the government's evil, the government's how to destroy it, the government's a tyranny, the government is blah, 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 Bill Clinton, blah. It was the same fucking rhetoric as you now see routinely deployed on Fox News, routinely deployed at Tea Party rallies. Remember, there is no Tea Party. Routinely deployed on hate radio. It's the same rhetoric. It's exactly the same fucking rhetoric, and it's worse now because the guy they're talking about is black.
Yeah.
So prior to Timothy McVeigh essentially taking them at their word and blowing up a federal building because, the federal government's evil, these people were just as bug fuck as could be. The day they found out it wasn't a Muslim.
Yep.
That it was a white guy, a white gun nut who spouted their own rhetoric and took them seriously about it. Suddenly they were like, oh, we didn't mean that. Where would anyone have ever gotten the idea that we thought the government was evil and it should be destroyed? Other than that's what we say every fucking day and that's how we get paid. That rhetoric is back, and it's back in spades.
That rhetoric never went away.
But now it's back in the mainstream.
Yeah.
And I tell you, there are 1,000 Timothy McVeighs waiting to crawl out of the woodwork.
That's what scares me is every step towards sanity – in terms of gun and ammo regulation, we're going to have another 100 Timothy McVeighs or this guy on the video lose their mind, lose their shit, and hurt somebody.
Well, and if you go to the Twitter and you do a search on Timothy McVeigh, you're going to find that lockstep conservative talking point is now in place, which is, well, Timothy McVeigh didn't use a gun. Therefore, gun control is pointless or ridiculous. It's not about gun control. It's about government control, man. It's about tyranny, man. I did it this morning just to test. Link after link after link to the same 10 words, the same graphic. Timothy McVeigh used a box, you used a truck, and used fertilizer. They're all still legal. See, you can never stop mass killings because it's not about the guns. It's about the person. And this isn't about gun control. It's about government trying to control your life, man. And for those people, there is no redemption in this world. Maybe in the next one, but not in this one. And every time the light shines a little brighter, they dig a little bit deeper into the sewer. And again, those people will always be with us, but they will not always be enabled. Their views will not always be taken seriously as if they are not crazy. That job falls to the mainstream media. And when the mainstream media stops treating these people as if their points of view were worth hearing, you will see less of them and less of their influence in the halls of power.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to talk for a minute about Iron Man 2.
Yeah.
Because you had Iron Man 2 on in the bedroom for a few minutes, and I thought, why? But
yeah, well, I saw 9 minutes of it, and I'd seen the whole movie. So
you've seen the whole movie, but Iron Man 2 had a character in it played by Sam Rockwell.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he's a arms dealer.
Yep.
And he's an arms dealer who's not quite as successful as Iron Man at being an arms dealer. And he's there in part for comedic effect, which Sam Rockwell does very well. But there was this scene where Sam Rockwell is getting ready to sell arms to the military. And the military is going to arm a prototype of an Iron Man suit. And so there's this 5-minute scene where Sam Rockwell just keeps amping it up and pulling out bigger and bigger and bigger guns. And it was written for comedic effect.
Mm-hmm.
And you watch that today in the context of what's happened in the past month, and it's not funny.
No. No.
And it's harrowing to see. And, you know, and this one holds 70 rounds, and this one holds 300 rounds, and this one holds enough rounds to infinity. And this, you know, you can carry rounds in a truck behind you, and it'll just pump them right into the gun. And he just keeps amping it up. And then finally he pulls out something that's the size of a cigar and says, "This is my baby."
Mm-hmm.
And this is the one that will blow everything up, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, "So which one do you want? It's hard to read you." And he said, "We'll take it all."
Yeah.
And that's the end of the scene. But you realize that things have changed. I don't think it's just in my perspective, my individual perspective. I think the zeitgeist surrounding large weapons with big magazines has changed. And I think that's a positive thing. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, and they're fetish objects.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
They
confer masculinity or power.
And all of those things, I am not going to follow the SE cup rhetoric down the rat hole into what a semi-automatic is versus an automatic. And you made a mistake when talking about ammunition. Therefore, your position is not credible. I'm not going to do that because that gets to be
because she's an idiot.
Well, because she is an idiot who's a gun fetishist.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm sorry, you mistook a 2-2-1 for a 2-2-3. Therefore, your opinion's not credible. OK, did this very large gun that can shoot a lot of ammunition really fast not kill all those people? That's the question that people like
her. Why should an individual citizen own a gun like that?
Yeah.
And, that's, and she could not answer that question.
And the question is always, and that's where we good liberals have to learn not to follow people down the rat hole.
Yeah, yeah.
Not to let them derail the conversation with a lot of, no, come fight on my territory. Come argue tit for tat on technical details with me because I know I'll win. Because I know I have much more detail. I'm much more obsessively detailed about guns than you are. Therefore, that's how we should have this argument. It's a loser. And the other one is, listen carefully to the argument that unless passing semi-automatic and automatic assault weapon control and ammunition control solves every problem,
No. Then
it's completely pointless. If you don't solve every problem with this one law, then the law is useless. And that is a standard that no law has ever been asked to live up to. It is only asked to live up to by people who are obsessed with keeping the status quo because they're obsessed with keeping their guns because they're terrified.
Well, and John Stewart's analogy with drunk driving laws and educating the public and working to really diminish drunk driving deaths is absolutely apt in that
regard. That was lovely. Yeah. That was because it really was some – I forget who the dumbass was – pointing out that, well, you know, it's like
we don't go after Detroit and tell them to stop making cars because people get killed in drunk driving accidents.
No, but we do.
We do a lot of other things.
We do have laws and we do have breathalyzers and we do have consequences and we do have public education. And by the way, here are the number of drunk driving deaths over the last 20 years. Look how it's going down, 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 down.
Yeah.
So don't be trapped. Don't be fooled into arguing on someone else's turf. Because the whole reason they're trying to bait you into having that discussion is because they know they will lose if forced to argue on the merits of what you're talking about.
Yep.
Anyway,
to stop there.
Drift Glass's helpful debate hint for today, January 10th.
Every week we post to our website and Facebook page an internet kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's internet kitty is Benjamin. Benjamin is a liberal's kitty. He hails from the great state of Texas and he is 12 years old. So hello, Benjamin, and welcome to our website and Facebook page. You are this week's Internet Kitty. You can send your Internet Kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. And be aware that if you write us at that email address, or if you mail us a letter via the U.S. Postal Service, go Postal Union!
Yeah!
We reserve the right to read your letter or email on the air unless you say otherwise. So, Driftglass, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
Well, Blue Gal, the Internet Kitties can read Jack Lew's signature just fine.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-doving. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license. Copyright 2013. Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.
That was gold, baby.
Well, no.
That's so platinum you can make a coin out of it and save the U.S. economy.